Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'll take a deep breath there. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, July 7th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Oh, hello, Melody. Sorry, I followed your suit. Just took another deep breath myself. Happy National Take a Walk Day.
Yeah, is that the take a walk, like when you tell somebody, take a walk?
Take a walk. Well, it depends on how the program goes, I guess.
Take a walk. Get out of here. Take a walk.
More importantly, though, it is National Father-Daughter Day, so a big shout-out to mine, Hannah, who knows how to make my day each and every morning I wake up. So here's to all the daughters out there, and hoping you make your dad's day as good as mine has for me.
Oh, isn't that sweet? All
right.
I was
hoping she cooks me dinner, too.
Yeah. You're not asking for too much, are you there now, buddy?
No, not at all.
Well, we had another day in the precious metals, you know, hey, there's green there. That's, you know, not by much, but it's green. That's all I can say. It looked like everything was green today. Not quite sure the optimism, but hey, we'll take it. And we have gold in the New York spot price aftermarket up almost $2. At 1741. Silver was up 2 pennies at 1932. And platinum was up $19 at 885, with palladium up 92 at 2084. The USDX today continues. It was climbing most of the day, and we're kind of holding at 107.06. Crude oil was up almost $4 at 102.30. And the paper markets today, we have, let's turn that down. Let's see, the paper markets, the Dow was up 346 points at 31,384. S&P was up 57, 3,902. The NASDAQ was up 259 points, 11,621. Asian markets were all positive. Europe was all positive after they booted out Boris Johnson. And although the EU doesn't really have anything to do with the UK, but maybe they were rejoicing anyway. Who knows? But the bonds, 10-year yield, 3.006. And everything in the oil, even natural gas, was up almost 13% today, 6.223. And, of course, as I mentioned, WTI was up almost 4%, and Brent was up 3.60. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on. We're going to touch a little bit on the trade gap today, and we're also going to touch a little bit on the it's kind of interesting because I didn't know some of these things about the U.S. oil reserves. But we'll be talking about that here shortly. So I guess we're going to just, as I mentioned briefly, old Boris Johnson steps down after he was partying just a little too much over there on 10 Downing Street, and then he lied about it. And, you know, and that's what a lot of these politicians did that during all these supposed COVID lockdowns that they enforced on the citizens of the country, even here in the States. You know, they you can't go anywhere, but we can. We can go wherever we want. You have to wear a mask, but we don't have to. You have to stay home. You can't get your hair done, but I can. So, you know, it was a lot of that, and but it was enough for him to get whacked out of office.
Perhaps he should have gotten his hair done. It might have made him more presentable.
Actually, I saw an interview with it amazes me that he's even on Fox, because, I mean, he's probably, I don't know when he went from liberal to conservative, but Pierce Morgan. He said he actually talked to him, and he said that he only wears his hair like that when he's out, you know, because that's like a trademark, kind of like Trump's was. They made this, their hair a trademark, that he doesn't really wear his hair like that. Who knows? It's just...
Guess you got to be an insider.
I guess you do. But so he's out. He intends to remain in place until a new Tory leader is elected. And he's sad to be giving up the best job in the world. Well, yeah. You know, you get paid, you get the party. And anyway, you know, it's just another joke of the politicians around the world anymore, Dave.
Well, even his opponents are clamoring for him to leave now. Keir Starmer, who's the Labour Party opposition leader, among those calling for good old Boris to step down immediately. He cannot cling on for months. If the Conservative Party does not get rid of him, then Labour will act in the national interest and bring a vote of no confidence, which typically results in a fairly immediate departure for the persons in power. So, I mean, there have been, as of this morning, 60 defections, resignations within his own ruling party, Melody.
Wow.
Just one Conservative Party member after another voicing a lack of confidence in Boris. So now, interestingly, the sterling pound traded higher shortly after the announcement, although compare it to the dollar right now. Mm. They say that Defense Minister Ben Wallace is the favorite among the Conservative Party to be the next leader. So we shall see.
We shall see. And and you know, when I mentioned about the I didn't know in California that there is a ban for the government employees to various states around this country that they're not supposed to go to.
Right. The state dollars won't pay for them to attend official functions.
And they're not allowed to go.
Yep.
And they're banned. How can they be banned?
Well, they're just saying, what they're saying is, I think the prohibition is against state or local monies being used in those states. I mean, the individuals can go on their own dime. It's just that California or any of its municipalities will not pay for their hotel and other airfare and all the other expenses.
But it's still, you know, it's, you know, and the point was was Newsom traveling to Montana. Well, you know, he said I think it was supposedly family functions, but he's got his security detail and so forth that I would think would be employed by the state.
Sure.
So, you know, and again, these are just another example
of exception.
What's good for, what's the old saying?
The goose.
The goose.
Not good for the gander.
Yeah. So.
What is a gander? I don't even know what a gander is. Is that
It's a baby goose.
Oh, baby goose. Okay.
I think.
I gotcha.
I'm sure we'll hear about it if it's not. It's a wild one, great day. That's your you're gonna Google gander.
All right.
But anyhow, we were waiting for the jobless claims and, you know, nudging higher. Tomorrow is the big government's job report, and initial filings for unemployment benefits totaled 235,000 for the week ending July 2nd. That's a gain of 4,000 from the previous week and slightly more than the 230,000 estimate. And this is the highest since January 15th. Continuing claims, they run about a week behind. They moved up to 51,000 to 1.375 million. As of also today, job placement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas reported that planned layoffs soared in June to 32,517. Now that's a 57% jump from a month ago. And now we're going all the way back to February of 2021. So this is the highest since then. And they noted that the auto sector announced 10,200 cuts, bringing the yearly total to over 15,500 or 155% increase for the same period in 2021. Now, this is supposedly a typical layoff at this time of the year, but that's a pretty big increase from a typical time of the year. So the 30 industries the company follows, 10 have announced more cuts this year than in 2021, Dave.
Well, we're seeing that these announcements of layoffs have really jumped in the second quarter, particularly after such a low level of cuts reported in the first 3 months of the year. Through June, Challenger says the annual total of 133,000 plus is down 37% from last year, but second quarter is the highest quarterly total since the first Q1 of 2021. Andrew Challenger, who is the company's senior VP, says that employers are beginning to respond to financial pressures and slowing demand by cutting their costs. And he follows up by saying, while the labor market's still tight, that tightness may begin to erase in the next few months. We'll have a better idea of that as early as tomorrow's non-farm payroll report. General consensus among economists around 250,000, a gain that is. It's significantly lower than the average of the earlier part of the year and would be the lowest monthly gain since December, actually, of 2020, and could speak to the growing fears of a recession, Melody.
Well, you know, the trade deficit. Let's see, do I have my mic on? On the trade front, the U.S. imbalance for goods and services that declined to $85.5 billion, excuse me, in May. These are the lowest of 2022. Now, the deficit is still up over 38% from a year ago. And of course, demand for imports has far outstripped the U.S. exports to the rest of the world. And that has a lot to do with the stronger dollar, too. The U.S. trade deficit with China fell a seasonally adjusted $2.8 billion to the $32 billion. And the deficit with Mexico dropped $1.6 billion. The imbalance with Canada actually increased $900 million, Dave.
Yeah, wow. Well, the trade... The U.S. trade deficit overall narrowed, as they say, as slowing demand here in the States comes amid rising interest rates, which have curbed imports, which could possibly result in trade contributing to economic growth in the second quarter. We'll know more about that on the 28th, 3 weeks from now. After being a drag on the economy for just about 2 years. Now, that's one of the first I've seen implications of a possible positive GDP growth in the second quarter. Virtually all the too-big-to-fail banks, as well as the Fed's, Atlanta Fed's GDP Now tracker, looking for negative growth. Over, you know, in terms of GDP. Now, imports of goods and services were up slightly, about 0.5%. And that was offset by a 1.2% increase in exports to a record high. So going to be, as we've been talking about here for many weeks, an interesting rest of the summer, Melody. And a lot of that begins tomorrow. You and Butch will be talking about this jobs report and what everyone's saying about what it means for Fed action when they meet at the end of the month. Already talking about another increase of a half to three quarters of a percent. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they even still have half a percent in that discussion. But anything's possible.
Truly. Well, you know, we have seen with the oil prices dropping a little bit, we have seen a little bit of gasoline prices dropping a little bit. We've actually saw the U.S. gasoline futures have dropped more than 11% this week following a decline in oil prices. And, of course, that was falling because of the concerns about a recession and a drop-off in demand. As of today, the national average for a gallon of gas still stands at $4.75. Now, that's according to AAA. And but it is lower than, you know, when we hit the high on June 14th at $5.02. So we're still 52% higher than this time last year. And but, you know, what's interesting, and I'm going to kind of go over to, I saw an article. This was actually Tuesday's article, and but the oil from the U.S. reserves were sent overseas. More than 5 million barrels of oil that were part of a historic U.S. emergency reserves release to lower the fuel price were exported to Europe and Asia last month. The export of crude and fuel, let's go on and down and see, about 1 million barrels per day is being released from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve through October. The flow is draining the SPR, which last month fell to the lowest since 1986. U.S. crude futures are above $100 per barrel, and gasoline and diesel prices are still high. Let me get to some more. The fourth largest U.S. oil refiner, Phillips 66, shipped about 470,000 barrels of sour crude from the Big Hill SPR storage site in Texas to Italy. This is all according to the U.S. Customs data. And this place in Italy, Trieste, is home to a pipeline that sends oil to refiners in Central Europe. Atlantic Trading and Marketing, an arm of French oil major Total Energies, exported two cargoes of 560,000 barrels each, the data showed. And, of course, Phillips 66 has declined to comment, and the other did not respond. And cargoes of SPR crude were also headed to the Netherlands and to a Reliance refinery in India, and a third cargo headed to China. These are from sources. You know, it's like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I mean, this is important. These are important reserves to us. And I can't even believe that 1 ounce of oil would be sent overseas. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody will be back with us momentarily. Listening to Thursday, July 7th, news and events, political, financial, economic, what have you. It's good to be with you. I'm glad you're with us. A lot of news today. As Melody mentioned, Treasury yields were higher today, extending gains even as the 2 to 10 year yield curve remains inverted. As we talk about a lot in this program, that's a key recession signal. Yield on the benchmark 10-year bond rose 8 basis points this morning, while that was about 2.99%, while the yield in the 2-year was up 5 basis points to 3.17. And I believe at the close, the 2-year was even a tad higher was it the 10-year that was at higher than the 30-year? But in any event, we know that market pros track the spread between longer-term Treasury yields and shorter-term yields. And, of course, the longer-term bonds are typically higher. However, not so since the end of March. I mean, this so-called inversion, especially if it lasts for a period of time, is often seen as a warning that the economy is weakening and a recession could be on the horizon. Mm-hmm. Melody, you back?
I am. So you just covered the Treasury's inverted.
Yeah, that inversion. Yeah. Yep.
And now I'm, something is happening in the at the Fed. $2 trillion worth of spare cash overnight at the Fed?
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Why don't you explain that?
Well, investors have parked a record $2 trillion worth of their spare cash in overnight investment at the Fed. Not sure if that's the New York Fed, which it usually is, or all of them combined. Whatever the case, that number blows past market watchers' expectations after some argued that activity would peak earlier this year. Fed's overnight reverse repo program acts as a critical storm drain for excess cash, carrying effectively the same interest rate as the Fed funds rate that the Fed targets and moves up and down. It's what enables the Fed to actually carry out its policy of raising short-term interest rates to fight inflation. And the scale of its usage now shows the complexities in sucking up the money that flooded the economy through the Fed's pandemic-era stimulus program, which, as we know, resulted in their balance sheet going all the way up to virtually $9 trillion. Fed's policy meeting late last month, officials talked about whether it would be appropriate to consider allowing participants to increase the amount of money they put into the repo each day if, in their words, usage continued to rise. And now it's the latest signal that Fed officials don't see the facility size as any problem. Crazy stuff, Melody.
Yeah, they never see any problems.
and
they never see any problems.
They're all transitory.
Well, here you have another levity is golden. And it's I didn't realize so many people tell lies in today's world. And I asked someone one time, I said, I don't lie. And they said, well, I do. It's like, what do you mean you lie? How can you say you're this truthful person and then you sit around there and say you lie? So maybe this will help explain that. And maybe they're just, maybe, I don't know if you call, like, if somebody says, do these jeans look good on me? And somebody says yes when they really don't, is that considered a lie?
Well, some may call it a lie, others a white lie, others a fib. However you characterize it, it ain't how you feel, so it ain't the truth. But here's the fascinating fact, Melody. The average American tells 11 lies a week. And some psychologists tell us that lying less actually improves our mental and physical health. That's according to a recent study by some researchers at Notre Dame University. They asked a group of people to stop telling lies for 10 weeks. They told the control group to, well, continue as you normally would. The truth tellers reported fewer instances of poor mental health. That included feeling tense or melancholy, as well as physical symptoms like sore throats or headaches or whatever. Sweating, big symptom of liars. The truth also reported improvements in their relationships with friends and family. And they said they generally felt more honest by the fifth week of avoiding lies. Something about a guilty conscience, right? The lies that people tell range from relatively harmless, like we talked about. You don't look good. You look good in those jeans, or you like the gift that gas card you got for your birthday when you actually didn't. To big and bad, like actually taking credit for someone else's work. The good news is that 89% of lies fall into the quote little white lies category, and 11% are big lies. That's according to a University of Wisconsin study. And it turns out we lie most to those we're closest with. The same study found 51% of fibs are told to friends, 21% to family, and 11% to school or work colleagues. Just 9% of our lies are told to strangers, which, when you step back, is an interesting thing, maybe, maybe not. When we tell lies, though, regardless whether they're big or small, our bodies respond. Psychologists found that lying can trigger an increased heart rate, high blood pressure, and elevated levels of stress hormones in the blood. And over time, that obviously can take a toll on your physical and mental health. But it's hard to quit lying, cold turkey anyway. But there are changes we can all make to be more honest. Notre Dame psychologist and a co-author of this study, Nita Kelly, says, one, don't exaggerate. When you're telling someone good news, especially, keep it simple and keep it real. Don't dress it up. Two, don't make up excuses. If you're late or you forgot to return someone's call, just be honest about what happened. Chances are your friends and family will understand. Although she didn't say about, you know, a strict boss. Sorry, I overslept for that important meeting. If you don't have anything nice to say, third and foremost, don't say anything at all. Of course, we've all heard this one. If you're at dinner, you hate the string beans, but love the mashed potatoes, just compliment the chef on what you enjoyed. Even just witnessing dishonesty can be bad for someone's health. According to another study at Berkeley, those who see someone lie, cheat, or steal can actually experience the same physiological effects that increase heart rate, blood pressure, as the one lying themselves. The bottom line, telling the truth is not only good for you, but for your friends, your coworkers, and kids, too. Discount Gold and Silver Trading built our business and reputation on providing clients with truth and honesty, not necessarily telling you what you'd like to hear. More importantly, we're going to and continue doing that for as long as we're around. And that melody, this week's levity, is golden.
All right. Those are something, it just amazes me, though. And this is a good report, so don't take this wrong, but it's like, how do we get these jobs to do these reports? I mean, these people get paid big bucks to do these reports and these studies and so forth, and it's just like, wow.
They're job security, I suppose. And I might point out, if it's any consolation, I'm sure this beats a story about English mating habits.
Yes, probably. I certainly hope so. But, the one I had to crack up, and then we're going to get going because we have other things to talk about, is if you're late or if you forgot to return someone's call, what if you just didn't want to call them?
I know.
I didn't want to talk to you. That's why I didn't want to call you, I don't know. It's a fine line, ladies and gentlemen, but it's always best to always be truthful. We sleep better at night, that's for sure. CPI replaces jobs reports as most anticipated, but the Fed is trying to navigate between growth and inflation. Tomorrow's job report, again, is once the front burner. The former director of the Congressional Budget Office said the CPI has gotten all the attention for the past 18 months, but with the U.S. on recession watch, the jobs report is back as the most important data every month. Even for Wall Street and D.C., Washington, the numbers carry risk in both directions. If they show a combination of massive job creation and wages rising more rapidly, the Fed likely will lean more into an aggressive interest rate rising campaign, creating a higher risk of recession. On the other hand, if the numbers disappoint in a major way, with net job losses or a meaningful rise in the unemployment rate, it will fuel worries that maybe a recession has already begun. But, you know what? Maybe that report about lying should be given to the U.S. government, because we never know. All the reports are just lies anyway. Many of them are distorted truths, Dave.
Well, what I find amusing, and maybe it's just this article, but, well, it's not just this article. I mean, you see this, at least I've been seeing a lot of this term the last couple of months, Goldilocks scenario. That so-called financial market soft landing, that
there's no soft landing.
The Fed can work some magic and ward off a recession or worse. And how ironic is it that a very famous fairy tale is associated with this agency, the Federal Reserve. I just find that so amusing. Anyway, be on the lookout 8:30 tomorrow. If you miss it, stay tuned. 4:00, Melody and Butch be here to tell you what's happening.
Absolutely. We're also going to talk about, we probably won't have time to get to this, but there's in talks of a bailout for union pensions.
Ooh.
Yeah, how about that? Thank you, taxpayers. So again, I mean, it's just like, how can they do this? No more bailouts. I don't care for who it is. It's not the taxpayers, huh?
What are they talking about?
I guess yesterday Biden touted a federal program to delay insolvency for private unions' pension funds. So he was in Ohio, Cleveland. About the American Rescue Plan special financial assistance program that would protect more than 10 million Americans in multi-employer plans from seeing their benefits slashed when their plan becomes insolvent, which many are projected to do so in the next few years. So, you know, and they tout like $90 billion is small in comparison to the bailouts. No, it shouldn't be any bailouts, period. I don't care if it's $100. Things need to fall where they fall. Or they're just extending this. Why should my taxpayer money pay for somebody's pension that was poorly managed. It's not the government's job to come in there and rescue these pensions. Grr. So, yes, I'm sorry for those who have those pensions, and y'all, those who have pensions, you know, need to take a peek at them and see where you're at. By doing nothing, yes, you become at risk. And so, I mean, it's, you know, we'll maybe go a little more into it tomorrow, but it's just like, yes, aren't we in a great condition in this country? Things are just going along swimmingly. We're not in a recession. We don't see a recession this year. Inflation was transitory. But now you have tons of pensions that are ready to go belly up. But
is a recession anyway?
What is a recession anyway? Well, do we have enough time?
Get into it.
You know, they're trying to, the Atlantic Fed GDP Now tracker, it estimates growth in real time based on a wide range of data. It did swing into negative territory for the second quarter that just ended. And so that raises the possibility that the U.S. started 2022 with two consecutive quarters of GDP contraction, and that's a recession. It can be a useful rule of thumb when trying to do international comparisons, but the widely accepted convention in the U.S. is to look at a more nuanced measure of business cycles. American economists, media organization deferred judgments on recession to a group of eight economists who make up the National Bureau of Economic Research Business Cycle Dating Committee.
I wonder who they date.
To shorten that, it's the NBER. NBER. So it's really not a government entity, but it's a private organization through which leading economists research and they actually publish. So it defines a recession as a significant decline in economic activity that is spread across the economy and lasts more than a few months, and bases its rulings on when recession started and ended on a wide range of data, Dave.
Well, based on that definition, it failed in 2020.
It did.
Yeah, I mean, when they said if the recession just lasted for 2 months, that's not more than a few months. I've taken now to calling the NBER Noober. I like that. Noober. It's, sounds, sort of doofusy. Rightfully, I think they've earned that reputation.
Never use Noober.
No.
Never use Noober. Anyway, we're going into a break right now. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Saw it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Dave Allen here, Melody, taking care of clients. This final segment, caller 1-800-375-4188. Here's an astonishing story, in my humble opinion. Court says that a staggering 71 million more people around the world are experiencing poverty as a result of soaring food and energy prices that came in the weeks after Russia's invasion of Ukraine in February. Now, according to the UN's development program, UNDP, about 51.5 million more people fell into poverty in the first 3 months after the war, living off $1.90 a day or less. That pushed the total number around the world with this threshold to 9% of the world's population. And an additional 20 million people slipped to the poverty line of $3.20 a day. Low-income countries, families spend about 42% of their household incomes on food, but as Western nations moved to sanction Russia, and still are for that matter, the price of fuel and staple food items, especially wheat, sugar, cooking oil, soared. Ukraine's blocked ports and its inability to export grains to low-income countries has further driven up prices, and that's pushing tens of millions more quickly into poverty. The speed at which this many people experience poverty is outpacing the economic pain felt at the peak of the pandemic. The UNDP noted that 125 million additional people experienced poverty over about 18 months during the pandemic's lockdowns and closures. Among the 20 countries hit hardest by inflation are Haiti, Argentina, Egypt, Iraq, Turkey, the Philippines, Rwanda, Sudan, Ghana, Kenya, Sri Lanka, and Uzbekistan. More people in these countries, some of which have been roiled by political turmoil, especially Sudan and Sri Lanka, are facing poverty. In countries like Afghanistan, Ethiopia, Mali, Nigeria, and Yemen, the effects of inflation are felt deeply by those already at the lowest poverty. Total number of people living in poverty or who are vulnerable to it stands at over 5 billion, or just under 70% of the world's population, according to the UN. Now, another UN report released yesterday said world hunger rose last year, too, with 2.3 billion people facing moderate or severe difficulty securing enough to eat. And that was before the war in Ukraine. UNDP recommends that governments target expenditures to reach the most impacted people through targeted cash transfers that can prevent a further 53 million people from falling into poverty at $5.50 a day. Wow, that's an eye-opener. And here's a doozy. As Pam and Russ Martin's remind us in today's Wall Street on Parade, the Office of Financial Research, let's call it the OFR, it's a unit of the U.S. Treasury Department, was created under the Dodd-Frank financial reform legislation in 2010. The OFR's job is to prevent through early warnings, the kind of catastrophic financial crisis that occurred in 2008 when all those irresponsible and corrupt practices on Wall Street toppled the U.S. economy. And that brought on the deepest financial crisis since the Great Depression and left the taxpayer and the Fed bailing out Wall Street megabanks that would have otherwise collapsed from their own hubris. Some of them did. Unfortunately, the OFR has been gutted of federal funding the last 5-6 years. Today, OFR is like the cop on the beat that's been stripped of his whistle, his walkie-talkie, and is wearing dark sunglasses on a cloudy day. One of the tools that the OFR is supposed to use to warn federal regulators that Wall Street's headed toward another train wreck is its financial index. This is how the OFR describes it. The OFR Financial Stress Index is a daily market-based snapshot of stress in global financial markets. It is constructed from 33 financial market variables like yield spreads, valuation measures, and interest rates. The OFR FSI is positive when stress levels are above average, and negative when stress levels are below average. The OFR FSI incorporates 5 categories of indicators: credit, equity valuation, funding, safe assets, and volatility. The FSI shows stress contributions in 3 regions: the U.S., other advanced economies, and emerging markets. Now, looking at the Financial Stress Index, that would have covered the 2008 financial crisis had the FSI actually existed at that time. The Martins say it would appear that the index is not very good at forecasting what's ahead. That's the very purpose of a forecast, isn't it? For example, by September 15, 2008, that's the day that Lehman Brothers filed bankruptcy, the FSI only had a reading of 10.803. But at that point in time, the Fed had been secretly bailing out the megabanks and their derivatives counterparties since December 2007. And that's according to an audit requested by Congress from the Government Accountability Office that occurred years later. In addition, Bear Stearns had blown up in March 2008. Government had to put Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae into conservatorship about 5 months later. And Citigroup, one of the largest banks in the country with trillions of dollars of derivatives both on and off its books, was teetering and spreading the disease. Now, given this 2008 insight into how the FSI is inadequately suited to provide an early heads up to federal regulators, Martins looked at the index in the lead up to the financial crisis that began on September 17, 2019. As they've told us, that crisis required the Fed to make cumulative loans of $19.87, you ready for it, trillion dollars. In the fourth quarter of 2019 alone, the too big to fail banks on Wall Street, $20 trillion. That number suggests that the Financial Stress Index simply slept through the entire crisis of 2019. Here's what the Martins say was actually going on in the fall of 2019 while the Financial Stress Index was measuring these below normal levels of stress. First, on September 17, the overnight repo loan rate spiked from an average of about 2% to 10%. We talked about this in this program. That signaled that one or more important Wall Street firms were in trouble. Repo loan market, as you know, is an overnight loan market where banks and others make predominantly one-day loans to each other against safe collateral, typically treasuries. And when firms or a firm backs away from lending to each other, someone's in trouble and spreading contagion. Now, because the repo market dried up, the Fed effectively became the repo loan market on September 17th and grew by a standing amount the amount of emergency repo loans it was making over the subsequent months. Instead of just making the customary overnight loans, the Fed also added loans lasting 4 weeks, up to 42-day loans in some cases. The Fed's cumulative repo loans for the fourth quarter of 2019 came to $19.87 trillion based on the data it released 2 days later. And just six of those houses received two-thirds of that nearly $20 trillion. As the Martins proclaim in their newsletter today, if that doesn't show a financial stability crisis, then what in God's name is? Amen. Thank you, Russ and Pam. Now, last today, Kelsey Williams says in his latest blog that he's reasonably certain that most people who use the term consumer price inflation think they understand it. But he asks, is the term itself a correct expression for what is meant? According to Investopedia, price inflation is an increase in the price of a standardized good or service, or a basket of goods and services over a specific period of time, usually 1 year. By definition, then, Williams continues, consumer price inflation seems to be an increase in the price of a basket of consumer goods and services over a specific period of time, usually 1 year. So is that inflation? Well, most people would yes, at least they would say that it's related to inflation. But can we explain that? Well, according to Investopedia, inflation is the decline of purchasing power of a given currency over time. Dictionary.com defines inflation as a persistent, substantial rise in the general level of prices related to an increase in the volume of money and resulting in the loss of value of currency. Now, before accepting either of those definitions at face value, Williams rightly points to a second definition of the word. Quote, inflation is the act of inflating something or the condition of being inflated, as in the inflation of a balloon. He says that the key to a correct understanding of the term inflation lies in the example just mentioned, the inflation of a balloon. He believes a better way to say it would be inflation is the act of injecting air into a balloon. When too much air is injected into a balloon, eventually the balloon will pop. But the popping of the balloon is not inflation. You know, whether the object being inflated is a balloon, a football, basketball, whatever, the act of inflation occurs prior to and is separate from the effects of that action, the swelling size and popping of the inflated item. Returning to that, the first definition I mentioned, then Kelsey says a reasonable concern should be that the definition of inflation as presented to us and is understood by most people is incorrect. The correct financial or economic definition of inflation, he argues, is the debasement of money by government and central banks. That debasement, which is the action or process of reducing the quality or value of something, occurs by expanding the supply of money and credit. The debasement of money leads to a loss in purchasing power and results in an increase in the general level of prices for most goods and services. The loss in purchasing power and the result in higher prices are the effects of the inflation, that is, the debasement of money by government, that has previously occurred. In other words, higher prices not always result of inflation. And widespread misunderstanding of that is convenient for especially politicians and others like central banks. Williams posits that without an accurate understanding of these facts, we're more likely to be persuaded by faulty explanations and especially finger-pointing. At the very least, that finger-pointing will be directed at someone or something other than the real cause. For example, Williams points to what has been said about supply chain disruptions and their effects on consumer prices. Nevertheless, he argues any prices resulting from those disruptions in the supply chain have nothing to do with inflation. Instead, the disruptions include the effects of trying to restart an economy that was forcibly shut down and trying to get back to full speed more quickly than was reasonable or is reasonable. It also includes the effects of economic sanctions on Russia and their effects on, say, global oil prices. With or without the effects of inflation, higher consumer prices resulting from these two examples are a fact, but they are not indicative or part of inflation when it's correctly defined. In short, inflation is the debasement of money by government and central banks, the expansion of the supply of money and credit. Debasement of money leads to a loss in purchasing power, resulting in higher prices or the effects of inflation for most goods and services. And higher consumer prices can result from issues independent of and not related to inflation and its effects. Inflation created by governments and central banks is intentional. All governments inflate and destroy their own currencies. The effects of that inflation are cumulative and, more importantly, unpredictable. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our engineer extraordinaire, Todd, and to you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.